And the passage today deals with a Christian's response to government, not to political parties. And in fact, I read an example the other day of two different Facebook posts. One showed a person very proudly displaying their "I voted" button and talking about they voted and who they voted for and all of this kind of stuff. But, you know, that's a privilege and a right in the United States, though, to vote. A lot of other countries don't have that. There's one name on a ballot, and if you don't vote that name, you might be shot. And if you don't vote, that one name on the ballot, in some countries, then somebody will write it in for you. So voting, and like that Facebook post, "I voted," voting is both a right and a privilege in our country. There was another Facebook post, and a woman had posted a pie, and she said, "I'm taking this pie to a very sick neighbor of mine. Please pray for them." Okay? In other words, she was doing something not political, but something for her neighbor, loving her neighbor. Well, here, this passage, this chapter deals with both. The privilege of government and obeying government, and also the privilege of helping neighbor and loving neighbor. And Paul deals with both of those. Actually, when this, I said to Jim, I think while I go in the parking lot, Nero was in power when this was written. Nero wasn't a fun guy. But this was, when Paul wrote Romans, it was probably in the early stages of Nero's reign, before he got real malevolent and violent and all this kind of stuff. But Paul is not talking here, as I said a few moments ago, Paul is not talking about political parties or specific individuals who reign. Paul is talking about questions of listening to government, of praying for government. And questions that arise: do we pray for government leaders? How do we pray? What are we supposed to pray? How do we treat our neighbors, especially those who refuse our faith and act mean to us because of it? What do we do? And what are we to make of a government that's powerful but oppressive? Do we disobey or not? And so Paul is dealing with this kind of stuff here. So in looking at verses 1 through 7, which deal with the Christian and the state, "Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, he who resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of him who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he's God's servant," but notice, "for your good." Notice the use of good here throughout. It's for the good. "But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. He is the servant of God to execute his wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be subject not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For the same reason, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay all of them their dues, taxes to whom taxes are due, revenue to whom revenue is due, respect to whom respect is due, honor to whom honor is due." Notice there he starts taxes at the base and he goes up to honor. Okay? So, the average person, as I said a while ago, didn't vote back then. But there were still certain obligations. If you were under Roman rule, there were certain obligations that you had. And here, Paul spells out a little more clearly Christian civic responsibility. He begins by saying, "Submit to governing authorities." That includes national authorities, such as Caesar. That includes the regional authorities. There were regional officials called equites, E-Q-I-T-E-S. They were officials who rode on equite, not an equite, equite, horses. They rode on horses, and their responsibility was to help maintain peace. So be subject to them. If you know, don't go against the peace, and if they tell you stop fighting or whatever, you're supposed to, you know, for the good of the peace. Even submitting to the tax collector. So here, the authorities are, as I said a while ago, not specific persons in office. They are to respect the office. Mary sometimes will say to folks when they'll be talking, say, well, I don't necessarily agree with the person all the time and don't necessarily like the person who is the president, but I was taught to respect the office of the president, which is different from the person. It's the office, not necessarily what's done with it. And, you know, even when I have said in the past, and I don't think there's anybody on either side worth voting for, so I'm going to pull a third party thing or whatever. And I have had people, well, then why vote at all? I said, because if you don't vote, you got no right to voice your opinion. Mary's mother, for the last few elections, wouldn't vote, and then she'd complain. And every now and then, Mary said, did you vote? No. Well, then you can't complain. So even if the person I vote for is in office, I have yet to totally like anybody that's been in office and agree with them wholeheartedly, even when I have voted and the person I voted for got in office. But at least I exercised that responsibility and that privilege so I can say something. And every now and then I'll follow it with somebody will do something really stupid and I'll say, somebody needs to put them in one of those circus cannons and shoot them into a brick wall. And then I'll look up this guy and say, did you get that? If I figure the NSA's listening. Well,
that's why I don't understand the education we ought to do when we call for what he's talking for. And I understand, and yeah. I agree with you 100%. But there are other options out there and other parties.
There are.
We've got certain things, but the Democrats and the Republicans have brainwashed the fact that one of the two of them are going to win, and that narrows their field down, so to speak. Like the Republican Party is having a hard time now with five or six of them bickering. They're even wanting to narrow it down to only two so they can go head to head. But these other fringe parties, like we had Perot, George Wallace, Ralph Nader, so forth and so through the years, had some good ideas,
yeah.
I thought. I wouldn't have voted for Wallace because he was a bigot. I was going to vote for him because he cut out foreign aid.
Right.
That's another thing. Our biggest problem right now is national debt. If we want to do something on it, we're all going down. I don't care who you vote for.
And so, you know, there are things that we like and dislike about the whole system and the whole process. And yet, Paul says, be subject to the governing authorities. Yes, Roger.
When I began teaching, of course, I was probably naive and still am. But maybe you can tell me what the difference is. I had assigned a poem to read. I don't know what it was. Anyway, it was the epic parental teacher interview. His parents, I don't know how we got on to it, but he said, we don't vote.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
We don't serve in the army.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Said, we show our patriotism by paying taxes. He said that's been a long time. Is that who that was?
Jehovah's Witnesses.
But anyway,
they don't say the pledge. They don't salute the flag, sing the national anthem, nothing like that.
Well,
they actually don't have birthday celebrations. They recognize you're a year older, but they don't have birthday celebrations. They could fill out a conscientious objection form, just like the Quakers. A lot of Quakers would not serve because of the whole idea of pacifism, and they would fill out a conscientious objector form and not serve.
I never could understand how Muhammad Ali could be a conscientious objector.
But, yeah. So here we've got this. But why does Paul say we should be subject to these authorities? Because ultimately, God is in control even over the leaders, and by submitting to them, we're submitting to God. And ultimately, even those authorities, whether they realize it or not, will have to answer to God. God has either put them in power or has allowed them to come in power. In fact, in the Old Testament, we find, especially in retrospect, in books like Chronicles and Nehemiah and Ezra and others, we find in retrospect, even in some parts of Daniel, that look back, as it's written later, look back and says, oh, well, God used Nebuchadnezzar as an instrument against Israel because of her sins to bring her back into a position to be redeemable. So even someone like Nebuchadnezzar was used. Cyrus the Persian is the only one that is for whom the term Messiah is specifically used in the Old Testament of a person, seen as God used him to accomplish this purpose. Now, the problem with Nebuchadnezzar is then once he accomplished that purpose that God used him for, he went beyond what he was to do, kind of like Nero. He went beyond what he was to do, and therefore he became an enemy of God. But there was a point in time where they viewed it as even, you know, God allowed him to come into power to accomplish the good of drawing the Hebrews back to God. But then even Nebuchadnezzar, who thought he was so great, because he thought he was so great and high and mighty, God ends up punishing him to prove to him that rulers still have someone that's over them, and that's God. And so but what Paul is saying here is that God allowed them to be in place for specific reasons, and in particular, note, he uses the word, he says, God has appointed, and therefore he who resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Good. Rulers are supposed to, and that's where Nebuchadnezzar and that's where Nero later and others went off the rails. Then do what is good, and you will receive approval, for he is God's servant for your good. Now, does that mean we can't have civil disobedience? No. It doesn't mean you cannot participate in civil disobedience, and doesn't mean you have to agree with all government officials, what they promote and say. But that one is to, he says, honor down here and respect. One is to do it in a respectful way, an honorable way, not going out and burning and looting just because you didn't like what the government said and causing harm to others. So it's about good. So what does that mean? Are there times when we don't obey the governor or the government? But are there, and if so, what are reasons where we might disagree and still keep the law of God?
You've got, of course, the latest situations with gay marriages and everything else. The woman in Kentucky is the one thing who refused to marry them. Things like that, her own personal, heart would not let her do it and everything else. The creed, religion, whatever you want to call it. And that's why people protest, I guess, to a certain extent. And that's why eventually you may get things changed for them.
Right. Well, but you're right. If government seeks to undermine God and seeks to get you to go against God, then civil disobedience, notice the word civil again, civil disobedience is a possibility. And Paul agreed with that here. He said, you know, God puts the leaders out there for good, not to create fear and panic by the way they rule. Unfortunately, a lot of rulers over the millennia have ended up using fear.
Second Amendment.
And we are to do good, that is, to live by the mores and the laws that seek to do good to our neighbor and to the whole. If you break those laws, you still pay the consequences. Why? Because the laws are meant for the good of the whole. unless they are laws that then prohibit your worshiping God and following God.
Well, starting about 1954, all the problems really started. What was that woman's name? Big Ace, O'Hare.
Madeline Murray O'Hare. Well, she died. They mysteriously died. They didn't find out for a while. That's really interesting. Is one of her sons actually became a minister?
Yeah. Well, I certainly didn't. So. But they started this, and the Bible students and this and that, and everything has gone completely negative, blockading every kind of Christian move we can make. You know, the birth control of this and everything else. And, there's virtually no religion, and we're lucky to still be able to have in God we trust on our money. And the mentality of that is whatever your God is to you is what that means. It doesn't mean the supreme being,
right,
the God that we worship is a God.
Although that's not how how it was originally intended.
No,
but.
And the country was founded on religious and Christian principles to start with.
Well, all Western governmental laws and mores can be traced back to biblical texts. But here Paul's talking about this in a time where it was a culture that was devoid of Christian values. Christian church was an extreme minority. But he believed that ultimately, all powers and all authorities would answer to God. Therefore, the Christian was to obey, except the exception is if the government sought to force them not to worship God. Other than that, the Christian was to obey the laws that were for the good of the whole. And that's what Paul is about, too, is the good of the whole. Christianity is to influence culture for the good of the whole. Not just for the good of Christianity, but for the good of the whole. And so, that's part of what he's dealing with here. In a time where Nero's in power, but he hadn't started burning people alive and all that kind of stuff yet. Yeah. Even to the point, but let me ask you, these words are sometimes tough to live by, though, aren't they? Why? Bedlam. Bedlam can occur, but we've already talked about some of it. When you see things, mores changing, when you see things going in other directions, I sometimes like to watch Saturday Night Live. I used to like to watch it more when Belushi and others were on it, John Candy and some of those folks. But you don't see them running skits, making fun of the Prophet Muhammad. About the only religion that they make fun of is Christianity.
Oh, didn't somebody try to do that, and especially in London or somewhere, the Muslims got enraged about the cartoons?
Oh, the cartoons, that was in Denmark.
Yeah, but I mean, anytime you...
And then in France.
They really come out.
Yeah, and in France.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. So, it's sometimes tough to obey these words because we see so many other things going haywire that don't seem to be for the good of the whole, but only for select groups. And that makes it really tough sometimes to obey. But he says, you must be subject not only to avoid God's wrath, but for the sake of conscience. What do you think he means by the sake of conscience? Well, okay. But what does typically when conscience kicks in, what does conscience do? It brings you toward good. Conscience says, wait a minute, there's this little nagging thing over here. Says, wait a minute, you shouldn't be doing that, or don't be thinking about doing that, or stop doing that because it's not good, not only not good for you, but generally it's something that causes harm to somebody else. which then could come back and bite you, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is to do good as opposed to, and not out of fear, but because it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. And so when he says here, don't do it just to avoid the stick. Don't even look for the carrot. Do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And according to God, it's the right thing to do. Like my former student, I don't want to go to hell. Well, wait a minute. Why not react to God's love and God's grace rather than be worried about the stick? Oh, well, no, you told me the primary thing is I don't want to go to hell. So I started that, but I didn't. I started to say, now, how do you spell that? Is it H-A-I-L?
Or...
But it's because going against those mores. Now, then he gets to the thing that makes us squirm, especially at this time of the year. We're coming up on April. My daddy always said, son, in this country, there's two certainties. Death and taxes. I did hear some folks one time that said death, taxes, and change. Things are going to change. But death and taxes. Death and taxes. That's right. Well, that's true. But there's going to be death and there's going to be taxes. Yeah. Right. But, he says here, while the reality is to be responsible while you're living on earth. Yes, your hope is in eternity, but be responsible, Christian, on earth. There's a Christian obligation to pay the taxes, which funds what? Well, what it's supposed to do is fund services that protect, that administrate, that take care of. I was reading one commentator and said, these services were for protection, for administration, for maintaining the civil structure so that society can be a civil society, and even for taking care of the roads. And I thought, well, not in South Carolina. But what he's saying here is when he says, because Jesus, going back to what you asked a while ago, Roger, Jesus talking about give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, to God what belongs to God, is trying to find the balance between following Jesus and honoring the government. Following Jesus and honoring the government. What's really interesting is, for the most part, Jesus doesn't attack the government. When he gets into dust-ups, it's with the religious authorities who are dishonoring God. Now, Paul is not trying to give a blank check or a free pass for abusing powers in government. He keeps talking about that for the good, that for the good, that for the good. He's not giving a free pass or a blank check to people like Nero or Uncle Adolf or anybody else like that. But rather, he is trying to say that the government should be there to help promote the good for all, for the majority, and not attack those who are on the outskirts. And that the Christian's obligation is to respect and do your part to be beneficent and help for the good, rather than to be in such opposition that it creates bedlam or anarchy. Except when it comes to, once again, the exception is when it comes to the government saying that you can't try to do that in China. After Mao goes down and others go down, what happens? Christian churches that had gone underground and kept the faith pop back up again. And even in the current regimes that persecute them, they have to make them jump through all kinds. They jump through all those hoops. They try to make it impossible with all the hoops they have to jump through to have a church. But those faithful Christians, instead of getting out there and say, well, let's do in the government, they jump through the hoops so that they can bring people to Jesus. Russian Orthodox Church went underground. Some stuck around as figureheads, but the majority of the church went underground. Soviet bloc broke up. What happened? Russian Orthodox Church springs forth again. So, they sought that which was good and continued to do so with honor and with respect. He then moves, okay, you obey the government, but now you take the pie to your neighbor that's sick. Or they've lost a loved one and you go, I still remember and probably will not forget for a long time in my life when someone in our neighborhood in Anderson's, one of the faculty members, history teacher at Anderson's, father died who lived, he lived with them. And his father died and all these people were coming, you know, and all these Baptists from Boulevard were bringing food and all. And saw Steve Litton riding his riding lawnmower, and he turned and saw him going down the street. The guy's grass was up about this high. He pulled in. He mowed the grass. When he was done, he'd come back down the street, pulled right in, back into his garage, turned off his lawnmower. Yeah. No, he didn't bring food, but and he didn't even ask. He didn't scalp his lawn, by the way. But you know, he didn't even ask. He just that was the thing to do. Christian action. And that's where he comes here. And that's where a few weeks ago we talked about it on Sunday morning. Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. All the commandments. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not kill. You shall not steal. You shall not covet. And any other commandment are summed up in this sentence. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Of course, if you don't love yourself, your neighbor's in trouble. But yeah, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, which is part of the Shema within Judaism. Love, verse 10, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is a fulfillment of the law. Now, that's tough because your neighbor put the fence 6 inches over. Or, I was talking to somebody recently, and a neighbor, and he was talking about he had a surveyor going over to his son's house because the neighbor was planting Lehman cypresses 3 inches away from the property line and was telling his son, I'm planting them here, by golly, no matter what, nobody's going to stop me because they're on my property. And so the surveyor was going over to resurvey and then explain to the guy, okay, fine. But when he comes along and he trims those Leland cypresses straight up one side because they're over on his property. So, yeah. So the neighbor who does you wrong is not the neighbor that loves you. But it's summed up here. He sums up loving your neighbor fulfills the law. You might not go out and sacrifice this lamb on such and such a date. But if you love your neighbor, you fulfill the law. You love God first and your neighbor second. You fulfill the law. And so that's what he talks about here as well. And he says, you know, and don't say that you're going to wait. Well, you know, I'll wait until when I know Jesus is coming back. I'll wait a few years and then I'll go out there and I'll help them. If they're still alive, you know, I go out and help them because you don't know what day, what time. In fact, salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. Now, Paul lived with this sense that Jesus was coming back any day, but in a more pragmatic and practical sense, is not our salvation, that is our ultimate goal and our ultimate salvation, closer for every one of us than it was before? And that is why. You never know when. We're getting older, so we're getting closer to when it's going to be completed. Yeah. The night is far gone, the day is at hand. Cast off works of darkness. What are works of darkness? What does it look like? Well, we can look around our world and see a lot of that, right? But you also find it in other places where you don't think. Deuteronomy says, cursed be anyone who misleads a blind man on the road. Cursed be anyone who moves the boundary of his neighbor. That was considered, those were works of darkness as well. Why? Because they didn't fulfill the law of love and they didn't look for the good of the whole. They looked to take advantage of. So he says, put off the works of darkness, put on the armor of light and conduct ourselves becomingly. Conduct ourselves becomingly. Putting on Christ, verse 14. But put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires. What does it look like to put on Christ? How do people know we put on Christ? Well, there were differences in what one wore in Roman society, which is what Paul's probably thinking of here. A man with a purple striped toga was seen as much more important than the average person that was forced to wear simply a white toga. Or a man with a white toga and a purple sash was part of the Senate. Much more important than the average person on the street. Distinction by what you wore. I mean, we've never seen that before, right? Before Uncle Adolf did it in the 1850s in Europe, before Hitler made them wear certain clothes and Stars of David and all that kind of stuff. Actually, Jews lived in ghettos behind locked walls. They were locked at a certain, the gates were locked at a certain time of the day, and they were forced to wear certain kinds of clothing, certain kinds of hats, so that they were distinguished from everyone else. Right? No, it's not. So, those were the differences. In what a rich woman wore something that was called a diastola. Literally, the word means that which is different. But it was a particular garment of clothing that let all the poorer people know that she was a person of means. And they were to bow and scrape. And could be punished if they didn't bow and scrape, if she wished. A person who wore purple silk in the Roman Empire. Finery. Silk shirts, silk robes. Was seen as much more worthy of privilege and of life than someone that just wore linen or wool garments, the garments of the poor. Roman soldiers, they were distinguished from other people because of their armor, but even within the Roman armies, different kinds of armor distinguished whether you were higher up or lower down. Whether you were a captain or a grunt. But notice, Paul plays that down. Not only here, but in other places, Paul will say there's neither slave nor free, male nor female, Jew nor Greek, we're all one. And here, make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires. Well, how does that go along with this? Well, if you look up in verse 13, conduct ourselves becomingly as in the day, not in revelry, drunkenness, debauchery, licentiousness, quarreling, or jealousy. If you were wearing a linen garment or a wool garment and you saw somebody walk by in purple, silk, jealousy, right? Janis Joplin's... It was seen... Purple was... Lydia.
In the Bible, it was centered out.
But purple, it was very hard to get the purple dye to stay in clothing, and so it was very expensive. To do that, and purple was associated with royalty. Purple was associated with wealth. So all of these distinctions. Right. And certain sea creatures they got it from. That made it, you know, it was very expensive to harvest them and to do that. So, not that we've solved the world's problems. In one way we have. Or even the 2016 elections. But, ultimately, to solve the world's problems could be summed up in a line from a Beatles song, but it's much older than that because it's found here and it's found throughout the Bible. Absolutely, Sybil. All you need is love. Ba-ba-ba-da-da. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law.
Love makes the world go
round. Right. That was, yeah. Yes. Love story. Yeah. But, you know, this whole thing, love fulfills the law. And the word he uses here is not philine, brotherly affection. The word he uses here is a form of agape, or agape love, which is not unconditional in the way we often think of it. It is unconditional in that we love because we've been loved and we don't put conditions on the love. Even if you wrong me, I will continue to love. That's what it means is unconditional here. Anything anyone wants to add before we... Oh, wait a minute. It's only 8 minutes till six. No. Anyone else? Next week, we will move to Romans chapter 14. Talk about scruples. 14 and 15. Talk about scruples and the strong being patient with weak and bearing one another's burdens. Probably should. I probably should. And not only those, but a lot of them that are up at, already sitting in seats of power. What's a scruple? thank y'all. God bless you. Go in peace. And the sun's still shining at 5 minutes till 7. Amen.